Hello, welcome back to Our Queer Experience. This is episode number 12. Andre, we made it to a dozen, and this is our first time that we're talking about politics. I know, right? One, 12 episodes, that's impressive. And two, how did we make it this long without talking about politics?
I don't know, especially since we met on a politics site.
I know, right? Like, that's kind of what brought us together in the first place. But for today's episode, we wanted to bring in some reinforcements. Today we are talking to Wyatt McGuire. Andre will give his bio in a minute. But first, I have a trivia question for you guys listening out there, you guys and gals and everything in between. What is the first major city to elect a queer mayor? Think about it. We'll come back to it at the end of the podcast.
Fantastic.
So, Andre, go ahead and tell us a little bit about Wyatt.
Yeah, so Wyatt is a third-generation Oklahoman and a lifelong Oklahoma City resident. We call it OKC here. He's been active in Oklahoma Democratic Party for more than a few years now and has spent a lot of his time with grassroots activism and volunteer work. He actually holds two different state-level positions within the state party. He's both vice chair of the 5th Congressional District, and for a little bit of context, in Oklahoma, the Democratic Party is divided by our congressional districts. Each one has its own executive board. So he is vice chair of the congressional district and state secretary for the Young Democrats of Oklahoma. In addition to being one of the only queer officials within the party, he is also the youngest inter-party official at the congressional level, as well as the youngest member of the Democratic Party's Central Committee, which is saying something because our chairperson is the youngest chair of either party in the country. So that just shows how much Wyatt has accomplished in such a short amount of time. So welcome, Wyatt. How are you doing?
Hey, y'all. I'm good.
Good to talk to you, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So, Wyatt, how old are you exactly?
I'm 23 now. Just turned 23.
Wow. Well, first, happy birthday.
thank you.
And that's so cool. At 23... I was in a much different place than I am now.
I get that a lot.
Yeah. So what inspired you to get involved with politics initially?
My parents have always been the only Democrats, on our street pretty much, or one of the few Democrats in our community. So the first time I remember interacting with politics would have been when John Kerry was running against George Bush in 2004. And I remember...
Yeah.
My mom would always have me color in these maps of the states as the results came in. So that was like the first time I ever, I guess, came into contact with politics. And then ever since then, I've been fairly involved at the state level and at the local level. I volunteered for Jerry Atkins' campaign way back in like 2010, I think it was, and Joe Dorman's statewide campaign for governor. And then, most recently, I've been involved with the Democratic Party, the inner party. I probably started about 2 years ago, sort of inspired, I guess, in part by Bernie Sanders and sort of like the left-wing movement that moved up.
So Bernie was kind of what got you to take the big leap into leadership within the party.
Yeah, so he's the reason, I guess, I got involved with the inner party, and I felt like I could do more with the Democratic community as opposed to just volunteering for candidates kind of on the side, I guess. So I guess that's what got me organized.
Cool beans. Well, on our queer experience, we also love to hear about our guests' kind of personal journeys. So we've talked kind of about your political journey. Tell us a little about your queer experience in coming to understand yourself and who you are.
So my older brother is 6 years older than me, and he's actually also queer. So I had a little bit of luck, I guess, in that I didn't have to walk my journey sort of by myself. And I was actually able to sort of ease into who I was because I got to see my brother experience the same thing. And so from a young age, obviously I felt, I think everyone or many people who are LGBTQIA, they feel different from a young age. So I don't think I'm any different in that respect. I always felt sort of, I would say like the cootie stage lasted too long for me. That's what I always would say to my friends. But I don't know, you just notice it. And then I guess I really didn't understand myself until about high school. But, you know, it was after my brother had come out and our family had already sort of dealt with, I guess, quote unquote, the issue of being gay. And my mom's side of the family has been really cool about it. And so has my dad. And, you know, there's some personal work to do with each person maybe, and everyone has their own journey to acceptance. And, you know, I've had my own share of that experience, but all in all, I've had a very supportive upbringing when it comes to my sexual orientation, which I think people find surprising because I'm from, you know, like conservative Christian evangelical Oklahoma, you know, smack dab in the Bible Belt. but you know,
for sure,
it's, there's definitely speed bumps along the way and barriers to just living a normal life still, whether it's, you know, someone driving by and yelling an expletive at you or not being served after or not being served before the other three, you know, hetero couples that moved in or that came into the restaurant after you. You know, that stuff still happens, and I've had my fair my fair share of experiences with that as well.
So how do you deal with that? So when you see something like that, like you're in a restaurant and, you know, three, four hetero couples coming behind you and they're served more quickly and with a better attitude than you are, how do you kind of deal with that?
I'm definitely more, and maybe it's because I'm younger, I'm definitely the one to say something if I feel like something wrong is going on or ill-intended. And the one, the last time I actually was not served at a restaurant, we had sat outside with like three or four other couples, and it was me and my my ex at the time, and we were actually just, you know, hanging out. We weren't on a date or anything. I guess we had a romantic aura about us because we were two gay men sitting next to each other. But anyway, we went to like a very popular restaurant, and they just served, I mean, everyone around us got served before us, and my ex had to like grab me and be like, Wyatt, calm down, because I was ready to, I mean, I hate the phrase, like, pop off, but, I mean, I was just frustrated. And I'm definitely the type of person to just say how I'm feeling and put the sort of the burden of proof on the perpetrator to tell me why they're not doing something wrong.
Yeah, and that's kind of that personal work you were kind of mentioning earlier is something we've talked about before in the show. You know, that journey is difficult for all of us, I think.
Right.
Do you see that kind of blending the two together, thinking about your experiences, do you see that kind of informing your political and grassroots work? Is that part of what drives you?
Yes. I mean, for sure. Growing up, I always viewed the Democratic Party as the party of gay rights. I mean, I think that my coming of age was when Obama was running for president. And so I really got to watch the Democratic Party move from our presidential candidates who were both, I think at the time, opposed to gay marriage and potentially both opposed to civil unions. I don't remember if Secretary Clinton was, but in 2008, you know, we got to watch them shift over the next 2 years from sort of like a fear of accepting LGBTQ people and then moving to sort of this, it was at first a tepid sort of tolerance, but now I feel like there's a full-blown movement within the Democratic Party to push for LGBT rights. And I got to watch that transition growing up on TV and play out in the media. And I feel like that's why I gravitated towards that party for sure.
Super cool.
And towards just volunteering in general. I mean, the first few candidates I voted for actually would have been, or I supported, not really voted for, volunteered for, you know, they weren't explicitly supportive of LGBT rights. But I think that was more indicative of, you know, an Oklahoma Democrat at the time rather than what the national mood was.
Yeah.
You hit on something interesting that I'd like to ask you about real quick. So I find because, you know, Hillary came around so late, she wasn't the only one. A lot of Democrats, you know, didn't support gay marriage until just a few years ago. You find that there is, you know, a little bit of resentment, even though they're, you know, good on these issues now, within the queer community, there's still a little bit of resentment for the Democrats. Obviously, it's better than a lot of Republicans, but not, you know, not substantially. So how do you address, you know, that underlying resentment?
I think it comes from misrepresenting our past as Democrats. I think a lot of people within both parties, but, you know, in the Democratic Party, in my experience, you know, we want to be right And I think that it's difficult for candidates who have been wrong in the past and have had views change over time to admit that those views did change over time. And so I think specifically with like Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and other politicians, I think if whenever they purport that they were champions of LGBT rights, you know, for decades, and then we look at their mm-hmm. records and that's clearly not the case, I think that's where that resentment comes from. And, you know, there are politicians who can say that honestly. I think Nancy Pelosi is a good example of someone who's fought for LGBT rights for a long time, even though she hasn't mm-hmm. been always like 100% right. But I mean, since she was city councilor in LA or wherever she started her political career. Right, San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. And just a quick note about Nancy Pelosi. She actually is originally from Baltimore. For our listeners, I'm originally from Maryland. And so her family, both her father and grandfather, were major political figures in Baltimore. And so when she got married, she moved to, or in her adult life, she moved to California. And she became a great political name in her own right out there. So just a small connection.
The more you know.
Yeah. So super cool. So with that said, kind of thinking about supporting candidates now, particularly being in such a red state like Oklahoma, how, as a queer, as well as a Democrat, how do you kind of make the decision of who to support? Is it just you go with the Democratic Party, or do you go with the candidate that you think is going to be best for the LGBTQ plus population?
So I try to take every election individually. I do tend to vote for Democrats, but I think that has more to do with my personal ideology than with the perfectness of the party or the candidates within the party. But mm-hmm. I have had instances where you have, you know, someone that I would maybe consider homophobic on both sides of the ticket. And I think that I have supported candidates that I would consider not really friendly to the gay community before. Generally, it's because I'm interested in another issue that they support. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't ever support someone where you can't pull them aside and get a commitment from them one-on-one. You know, if this bill's to come up, how are you going to vote on it? And so, I've asked politicians questions like that, and sometimes you get the answer you want, and sometimes you don't. And I always say, I think it's okay to leave a spot blank on a ballot if you do not like either candidate, if you do not like this election. I think that is okay.
Yeah. And what – I think a lot – there's a argument that a lot of folks would make that says if you don't like either candidate, perhaps that means that you need to become a candidate. What do you think about that kind of logic?
I think that there are some people who are just gifted at politics, and whether that's the charisma aspect of it or the policy aspect. And I think that some people would be better as a campaign manager or as an organizer. I think that sometimes the best way to get involved isn't necessarily to run yourself, but to figure out how you can fit into a campaign framework most effectively, because sometimes the person who is the best spokesperson isn't the most well-versed on the policy. And sometimes the person who is, the public policy wonk can't articulate why their policy works. And so I think that it's important to just find where you fit best and to accept that sometimes, you know, you need to step up and lead, and sometimes you have to step back and support for policies and for movements to move forward and progress.
Okay, cool beans. I think that's a real measured approach.
Because you are, you know, a member of the because you are a gay man, have you run into any opposition among, so you want to go work for a candidate and they're not comfortable, especially more than a few years ago? Did that ever happen to you?
I've never had a candidate tell me they would, Oklahomans are kind of, I would say we're really polite. So I've never had a candidate ever say to me directly, you know, I don't want you around here, or we prefer only straight people. I've never had that happen before on either side of the spectrum. I've never had, you know, any conservative I've supported, you know, tell me they don't want my support.
How about among the voters?
I've definitely, especially amongst older voters, there's still some hesitancy to accept mm-hmm. LGBT issues. And so I would say I get pushback in the form of people saying, you know, don't focus on identity politics. And, you know, not everything is a gay issue or stuff like that comes out more than direct condemnation of, like, gay marriage or of sexual orientation.
I see what you're saying. Thank you.
Yeah.
Being, I guess, a party representative, you have greater access to people running for office and people in office than your average citizen. So for those who aren't involved in a political party, who aren't involved majorly in politics, what advice do you give them for engaging with their representatives and potential representatives?
I think every voter should put in their phone the office numbers for all of their representatives and their governor and any national office they're interested in. So if you want to call the office of the president, because in my phone I have my congressional rep, Steve Russell, and my I have both my state senators and both my national senators, and then I have my House rep as well, and then also city councilman. And anytime you're upset, that way you don't just have to look up something. You can just quickly dial in your phone, leave a message, or talk to someone right then and there. And then you don't have to do the work every single time you're frustrated. Because I think the hardest part about getting involved is people don't understand how to get involved, or maybe don't haven't been told what to do, or we don't really make the process accessible. It's kind of it's difficult to get online and Google your state rep if you don't know who they are, what district you're in, and then you find a number. It might not be the right number. It's hidden in a state website. So I think the first thing you should do is just save all the numbers at one time, and then when you're frustrated, just demonstrate that you're frustrated, and that in and of itself will spur involvement, just getting that conversation started. I guess I would also say everyone feels pressured to get involved with popular issues. You can always get involved with a local issue. I live on the northeast side of Oklahoma City, so it's a historically black community. And so one of the issues that I like to get involved with is Black Lives Matter, and then also any issues that kind of pertain to, like, historical gentrification in the city. Those really interest me, and because of where I've lived and where I've volunteered, I can see the impacts of those issues directly. And so it's a lot easier for me to get involved there, because I feel like a connection, I guess, to my neighbors and to, my geographic location.
So as a party official, so that makes you a professional in this area, an expert, so to speak. Think about the past year, how we saw trans folks being elected in various parts throughout the country, and how we saw other members of the LGBTQ+ community being elected to office across the country. What do you make of that wave, and where do you see it kind of going?
I hope that it doesn't go, but I think that we're seeing a greater representation, particularly amongst LGBTQ people, maybe because our issues have been sort of pushed, and we're in the process of sort of defending them. And so I feel like we're energized right now. And I think that we're to a point where everyone is realizing that you can't meet somebody who isn't connected to someone in the LGBTQ community. Everybody has a friend or a neighbor or a cousin who identifies as transgender, gay, lesbian, queer, intersex, asexual. Somebody in your circle is that. And so I think now, because we have increased visibility, there's a more of a willingness in our community to stand up, and hopefully, and I'd like to think, more of a willingness of our allies to back us up and to prop us up. And so I think that is why it's happening, and I'd like to see that continue. But I think that we could also do more to elect particularly people of color from the LGBTQ community. I think that there tends to be sort of a race disparity in who's elevated, especially in the Democratic Party.
Cool. This is not related to politics necessarily, but it's something I noticed that you just said that I wanted to bring up. You mentioned folks who are asexual being part mm-hmm. of the queer community. Do you believe they should be to the queer community, or do you think that particular identity is separate and unique?
I think that in a way it is unique, and that I think that the asexual experience is something I couldn't describe to you because I'm not asexual. I have had the opportunity to know folks who are asexual, and I think that in a lot of ways their plights are similar to those in the LGBT community. And I don't feel like we should put a limit on who's involved in LGBT issues, especially when it comes to discussing the spectrum of sexual orientation and kind of what that means. And I think because asexuality falls outside that sort of heterosexual norm, that they should be included in our community. And I think, lesbian, gay, transgender, bisexual people should make an effort to understand asexuality and then, to tell also their stories to their friends and not just the story that they understand.
Cool. Thanks for sharing. I think a debate that is happening in the queer community right now at different levels, and I think it's an interesting discussion because I also feel like, at least in terms of folks who identify as asexual that I've encountered and have gotten to know, they never wanted to be a part of the queer community or be put under that banner. So it's interesting. I don't know. Maybe the banner is not as necessary as it once was. And it should just be about, here are the groups of folks who are open and accepting to people of all up and down the spectrum of sexual orientation and sexual expression and gender expression, and there's the folks who aren't along that grouping. What do you think?
I don't have too much of expertise on this, so I'm kind of winging this response based on my gut feeling.
And that's fine.
But, I personally feel like the struggle when it comes to sexual orientation, just being non-conforming to the norm, it pushes you into a different category. And I think that if asexual people don't want to be included in LGBTQI+, that can be their decision, but I think that my decision would be to include them just in case. And I think that to err on the side of over-inclusion is better than to err on under-inclusion.
The theme that keeps coming up in our conversation with Wyatt is just to own your voice, to speak up for your issues, and to speak up for your experiences. And that's something that, that's what we're trying to do with this podcast as well, because it's so important, not only for the queer community, but for, everyone. So I appreciate what you're doing in that mission, Wyatt. I have
you.
A couple of quick questions for you, though.
Yeah,
please. Rapid fire. Who is going to beat Donald Trump in 2020?
Any generic Democrat, hopefully. That's my hope.
Fair enough. And who in the political sphere right now has the best chance to be the first LGBT+ president?
President? Now that's difficult.
Do you think it's going to be soon?
I'm trying to think of, it's hard because the media floats around all these people, like 8 people that are going to run, and that's all you hear about. So I'm trying to cycle through all the people I've thought of running over the past year. But I don't know if I could pick someone for president, but I do know that there is one LGBT official that I would like to see move ahead, either within the Democratic Party or nationally. And I'm going to butcher his name, but it's like Pete Buttigieg or something, Buttigieg. I've never encountered his last name before, but he's an official in Indiana. And he's 35 years old, young gay man. And he's in a red state, in a red city. And I think that he is the exact type of person we would like to elevate. Someone who's not only gone through an LGBT experience, but a common LGBT experience in a red state that maybe we don't necessarily hear about that much. I would like to see him.
He's referring to, so we can just get it clear for the viewers, I can't pronounce his name either, Buttigieg. He's the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and he seems like a legit guy who's climbing up the ranks. I think you're probably, he has a chance. It might happen. You never know.
Yeah. He knows.
He did make a run for Democratic Party chair. In the early, he was one of the last people to drop out before Tom Perez and Keith Ellison were the last two in the running. So I think he dropped out either last, the last person to leave or the second to last person.
Wow. So he's definitely a mover and shaker
right.
in the national scene.
I think so.
Can't believe it. We're almost out of time.
We basically are.
It's been so fantastic talking with you, Wyatt. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I appreciate you having me on. It was fun.
So if someone wanted to learn more about you and more about the Oklahoma Democratic Party, where would they go?
So we have a website. It's okdemocrats.org. That's where you can get our statewide events. And then I think a lot of people use Facebook for events. You can always go to the Oklahoma Democratic Party Facebook page, the 5th Congressional District Facebook page. And that's where I post most of my events. But, yeah, that's primarily where I'm at. I don't have my own plugs on social media. I'm a little bit old school, I guess. Maybe it's because I'm from Oklahoma. We're a little behind. But, yeah, Facebook's definitely the way to look.
Fantastic. And I think that's true no matter what state you might be in. Well, definitely check out the Oklahoma Democratic Party. But no matter what party you're part of, you're going to have a state group to get involved with. So politics starts local, right?
Yes, we have the largest LGBT organization in our state is Freedom Oklahoma, and it's based in Oklahoma City. And I've volunteered with them a few times, and it's a good organization. They do good work, and they've successfully blocked a lot of anti-LGBT legislation by working with Republicans over the past few years.
Well, before we sign off, Bruce, the trivia question. Right?
We do still have one more question to answer. Wyatt, do you know it? What is the first major city to elect a queer mayor? Wyatt, you want to take a guess? You don't have to know. There's no reason you would, probably.
I don't know. I feel like I
like to put you on the spot anyway.
I looked it up at the beginning, and I definitely forgot it. So,
well,
Andre, why don't you go ahead and tell us?
The answer might surprise a lot of folks, but it was Houston, Texas. In 2010, they elected Anise Parker. She identifies as a lesbian woman, and she was the first openly queer person to be elected to mayor a major U.S. city. And she was a Democrat as well. So that as well.
Awesome.
Well, I think that is all for now. Thank you again, Wyatt McGuire, for joining us today at the Oklahoma Democratic Party. We wish you much success. Bruce, any fun words?
Thanks for coming on, man. It was awesome talking to you.
Yeah, for sure. I really enjoyed it.
And thank y'all for listening. Bye, y'all.